This is Calvin Hammond in Studio 4 from the Frontline. In this program, we will be discussing oceans of opportunity, and to help us explore this subject, my father, Dr. Peter Hammond, is here in studio to answer some of these questions. Dad, this last week, you were regularly driving down to the harbor to go on board warships. What does this have to do with missions and the mission of Frontline Fellowship?
Well, these were Russian and Chinese warships visiting Cape Town for multinational maritime exercise, they said. And as we're based in this very busy port city of Cape Town, it's what William Carey called the uttermost part of the earth. That's what he called Cape Town, because we're on astride two oceans. The only city in the world astride two oceans, which is the Atlantic and Indian Ocean. Warm Indian Ocean, cold Atlantic Ocean. But we're finding mission fields coming to us frequently. Like on this occasion, we had on Sunday the 24th of November, 21-gun salute exchange between the Russian Navy. This is a missile cruiser. This is the Marshal Ustinov, right from Northern Fleet, in other words, up by roughly Murmansk on the Arctic Sea. And this flotilla, because the Russians don't travel on their own. They've got this battle cruiser, but next the battle cruiser was also its tanker, which is to supply fuel, and it had a rescue tug. Interesting, they travel their own rescue tug. I suppose like us going into an operation with tanks, but you've got your
recovery vehicle. How many people can they fit on a rescue tug?
I'm not sure how many the rescue tug fits on it, but it would be able to push or pull even a massive ship. Mm. So if the ship was dead in the water, the tug's strong enough to pull them. So it's not so much how much they can keep on, but it's as tough as anything. You think of it like a massive tractor next to a car, that sort of thing. But this came 5-month journey. We're talking about 25,000 nautical miles or 47,000 kilometers from its home base in Severomonsk, which is not too far from Murmansk. And that's a place where they would be 6 months day, 6 months night. The sun doesn't rise and set every day because it's up in the Arctic Circle. And they were visiting here for this historic first time ever Russian, Chinese, South African naval maritime exercises. So they were doing everything from surface gunnery exercise, helicopter cross landings. In other words, helicopters on the different ships landing on the ship boarding areas, doing boarding operations, disaster control exercises. And so when I heard about this, I made phone calls to military contacts, got myself onto the media briefing, because as it came in on Sunday, Monday, they were already organizing their media briefing. And because I do things like From the Frontline and Frontline News and write for other magazines and so on around the world, they put me on the media. In fact, it was interesting that I got this diplomat from the Russian embassy contact me and said, give me your details, who you write for or broadcast with, and I'll have our security people check into you and we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
So I'm sure virtually every country in the world does that, but only the Russians tell you they're doing it. Mm. The Americans would say, you know, we'll get back to you, but they wouldn't tell you we're getting our security people check into you. So next thing, I've got a South African Commodore, a commander, contact me to say I am invited and I can join the media on board the South African ship Amatola, which is one of our frigates, German-made frigates. So what has this got to do with our mission? Well, we're mission to the military. We want to share the gospel. And here we've got Russian and Chinese sailors coming to our port.
But then why do you think they were visiting Cape Town, and Cape Town of all places?
Well, this is one of the most busy sea lanes in the world, the Cape of Good Hope. And if you look at the world, this is one of the choke points of everything from oil through to trade. You can imagine the amount of ships that pass around the Cape of Good Hope is more than at any other particular point in the naval world. So from a naval point of view, this is a super important, what they call a choke point. This is a gateway, effectively. You know, there's obviously, you've got the Panama Canal, you've got Straits of Gibraltar, you've got the Gulf of Aden, you have Suez Canal. Those are major places, but the Cape of Good Hope is super, super important, and it's busier than the rest. So I think what this is a projection of power. Russia is stepping into the vacuum left by the West. And so when the United States and Europe decide to put sanctions on South Africa and to force us into an accommodation with the ANC and negotiated settlements on. What they did is they set in chain a series of motions that now you're seeing the culmination. Just earlier this year, Russia's president, Vladimir Putin, actually had a summit with over 30 African heads of state in Sochi. That's where they had the Winter Olympics a few years ago in Russia. And he announced a new economic thrust initiative by Russia. So Russia's moving into Africa and snapping up markets, and the Russian economy is booming. And logically, what they're next stepping onto is a projection of naval and military power. We just recently had the largest nuclear supersonic bomber in the world, which was a Russian Tupolev 160, I believe, came and landed at our airport in Vardakluf up country. And again, phenomenal. It flew all the way from Russia with just a mid-air refueling in flight to get here. Again, just showing we can do this and strengthening local ties. And I believe what we are seeing now is Russia has formed this group called BRICS. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, BRICS. And what they're doing is...
This was formed quite a while ago, I think.
It has, but this is now the next step in BRICS, as they're now moving to naval, air, military cooperation ventures. Basically, what they're trying to do is set up an alternative economy to what the American dollar is, and to set up an alternative defense structure to NATO. And here we are in the middle of this. And it's an intriguing step, because they said this is only the third time since the Cold War. And the Cold War ended in 1989 with the falling down the Berlin Wall just 30 years ago. This is only the third time in the last three decades that a Russian cruiser has come into the South Atlantic. And this is a massive cruiser. This was a really big ship. So I think this is a very significant exercise. I went there to learn.
But was this your first opportunity to minister to sailors from foreign nations?
No, actually, back in 1995, we had a phenomenal opportunity, because the South African Navy was celebrating its 75th anniversary. And the 75th anniversary of this was when the Russian, not only was South African Navy celebrating 75 and years anniversary, but in came 29 nations, 89 different battleships, everything from China, Russia, India, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Chile, all over the world. It was phenomenal. And when I saw this is 1995, went to the Bible study, cleared them out of every foreign language thing they had, organized outreaches, frontline, just relocated the waterfront, and contacted the Navy, friends of ours, chaplaincy, got the band there. We took over the amphitheater, another old amphitheater at the waterfront, which we had to hire recently for the Uruguay to come. But back then, they had no such organization. It was just open. And so moved in, took over the amphitheater, had the bands playing great songs like For Those in Peril on the Sea, distribute gospel literature on the side, preach the gospel open air. And they were Pakistani, Saudi Arabian, closed nations coming there that we were able to evangelize. So that was great. But as I was well received by these friendly Russians just this last week on the Marshal Ustinov, it reminded me of my first encounter with Russian sailors. I was in Mozambique, 1982. There I was in Maputo Harbor distributing Russian gospel booklets and Russian New Testaments. And I just managed to distribute, I think, 5 New Testaments in a row. And I was thinking, wow. And this was the Cold War, 1982. Russia was our enemy, the Soviet Union, all of that. And smuggling Bibles into Russian hands was really hard. So in Maputo, seeing some Russian warships at distance, and I'd seen these Russian sailors and been handing over, and back then they had these red stars in their, on their caps. And I was starting to feel really pleased with myself, think, boy, this is really great, this is so successful. Suddenly, this large Russian sailor bellowed, obviously with anger, shouted at me something that must have been abusive, picked me up over his head and threw me into the harbor. And then he threw his New Testament on top of me, and someone else threw his on top of me as well. And I was like, where's the ladder? Where's the way out of here? And I'm in, oh, this is oily, yucky, muddy, filthy water. And so that was my first attempt at evangelizing Russian sailors. But fortunately, this one was a whole lot more pleasant.
This is true. It sometimes seems that Cape Town is far from the mission field. And we're actually at the southernmost point of the African continent, but actually there are mission fields all around us. Is that why you think that we're based here?
Well, it would seem to be, because there were times after Frontline Fellowship got started. Well, in fact, we first started in East London. Our first Frontline Fellowship mission office was actually in East London, in Oxford Street, just above a chemist. And then we were relocated to Kempton Park, which I thought was pretty good, because that was close to one of the biggest Bible societies in the country and not too far from Mozambique. But as we got relocated to Cape Town, it was primarily because I studied at Baptist Theological College. And even then, I considered seriously relocating back to the Joburg, Pretoria, Kempton Park area, or maybe up to Windhoek, which was close to Angola. One stage, we even seriously considered going to Matari to be based to where we were going to be able to see the... Matari was close to Mozambique, so I seriously on several occasions considered relocating to different areas. But with hindsight, you can see why God placed us here, because we've got one of the biggest printing cities in the world, a massive amount of printing here, and this is a port city. We might be at the uttermost parts of the earth from William Carey's perspective. We might be at the southernmost point of Africa, but this is a city that is booming. When I was born in Cape Town, there were only 200,000 people here. Now there's something like 4.7 million. And we've got every language group here. When our mission started in Cape Town, I could go out doing literate evangelism and I just need two languages, English and Afrikaans. And then occasionally you'd need a few Khoisa tracks, because a couple of Khoisa speakers were here. But now you need a vast amount, and we've got about 100 languages here and we use them. Portuguese, German, French, Spanish even, and we're using Russian. I mean, we literally got boxes of Russian literature prepared for this outreach just last week, and Chinese and so on. Indonesian, many different languages, Swahili and so on. So there's no doubt that the world's coming here, because this is a very busy port city. It's now a place where a lot of films are made, a huge amount of tourism, and as a naval port, we get a lot of different ships coming from many different countries. For this reason, I think, yes, the mission fields come to us. We are able to go into places near Cape Town, as your brother-in-law Hunter does, which look like you're in the Middle East. We've got a place like Boerkop up in Malay Court, as it's used to be called, where you could walk a person in there and they could swear they're in the Middle East. You could make a film there and you'd think you're in somewhere in the Middle East or Morocco or something like that. And it's, you know, mosques all over the place, people wearing hijabs, the style of the houses and the clothing, everything. And the death to American, death to Israel, and one Jew, one bullet graffiti on the walls. You can tell, yeah, okay, you're in a Muslim area here. And so we do door-to-door and Muslim evangelism there. So Cape Town is like a world in one country. It's like a Pentecost situation. So, yes, I think this is a really phenomenal thing. And what's great about it is also we can train people for the mission field crossing borders right here, because you can evangelize everyone from Muslims, Buddhists, New Age, Hindus. It's all around us. So, yes, Cape Town is no longer just a base for reaching the mission field. The mission fields come to us too.
And then speaking of all of it being around us, when you were around the Russians and the Chinese sailors, did you notice any signs of the old communist regime of the USSR? Or do you think that the Russians have well and truly gone away from communism, but now it's been a bit more embedded in the Chinese and yes, their ways?
Yes. In fact, I don't think you can compare the Russians and the Chinese. The Russians that we dealt with were friendly, open, cheerful, happy to discuss theology, to talk about God, enthusiastic, polite. And I was given a grand tour of their battleship and they explained all their different weaponry. And it's just like, we're friends, we allies, that kind of attitude.
And then if you speak about the Russians now compared to Russians, let's say 20 years ago, obviously, or 20 to 30 to 40 years ago, obviously a lot has changed.
Yes.
Why has everything changed?
The coming down the Berlin Wall, 1989, the collapse of the Soviet Union, 1991, pulling down the old red, blood-stained flag of communism with its hammer and sickle on, replacing with a beautiful white, blue, and red flag of Russia. And you can even see now, you go onto this beautiful Russian ship, the Marshal Ustinov, and what's their flag, the ensign? It's the St. Andrew's Cross. St. Andrew's Cross, the same one which you would look at in Scotland as their flag, except in this case it's a blue X on white instead of the white X on blue, which the Scottish have. But that's the ensign of the Russian Navy. And the jack of it, which flies from the front of the bow of the ship, that's also St. Andrew's Cross, with a St. George's Cross even, which is, you know, makes it almost look like the Union Jack, but it's got the colours in different positions. But so you've got the St. Andrew's Cross and the St. George's Cross together at the front of the ship, the bow of the ship, and the stern of the ship, you've got the ensign, which is the St. Andrew's Cross. Mm. And throughout the whole ship, you can see a different attitude. So, no, definitely there's been a massive change. The Russian Navy has gotten rid of its old communist symbols. It embraced, again, a Christian symbol of St. Andrew's Cross. They no longer have the commissars, they now have the chaplains. The Russian government's printing Bibles. Bibles aren't illegal. And there's no doubt that the attitude with the Russians has changed dramatically. Now they are more pro-life, pro-family government, and so on. But the Chinese, now that's totally different. They were rigid. They were closed. And I'm sorry to say that despite the best efforts of myself and other missionaries of ours, we failed to get Bibles into the hands of Chinese sailors. We tried.
Not even one of them.
We don't know of one. We tried on days. Even at the soccer match where the Russians, the Chinese, and the South Africans were playing soccer at Greenpoint, we sent our teams. While the Russians were friendly and open, the Chinese were closed.
And why do you think this is?
Well, it's rigid communist. You could see, for example, the Russian ship, we could walk onto the plank and the people just welcoming, friendly, no searching and so on, and they're friendly as anything. The Chinese ship, the frigate, that was, and the name of that frigate was the Wei Feng. It's a type 54A frigate. So that one, you had to take everything off that you could take off. They wouldn't let you take your camera, your handbag, your anything. Backpacks are all on the table left there behind, and they make you walk through a metal detector. They wand you, they search you, they search your pockets. So you knew you were going into a one-party dictatorship communist state. It was worse than smuggling through Checkpoint Charlie and Berlin Wall during the Cold War to get into this Chinese frigate. And the Chinese sailors stood at rigid ramrod attention, not moving a muscle as far as you could see, sometimes for an hour or more on end, absolutely rigid, no real interaction, no chance to engage him. So the contrast between the Russian ship on the one side of the jetty and the Chinese on the other, and their sailors and their mannerisms and the officers, the men, you could just see a total different. Russia appeared to us, as far as I could tell, to be a free country with pro-Christian sentiments, whereas the Chinese were plainly atheistic, plainly communist, with no individuality, and they must have been terrified. They wouldn't even take a tract or a pamphlet or a leaflet from us, let alone a New Testament or a Bible.
Do you feel that maybe deep down inside, maybe some of these Chinese sailors were actually wanting to accept?
Oh, I've got no doubt many would have been, but they must have been ordered not to. And they were never on their own. They were plainly in groups. In fact, for example, at the soccer match, and this was also funny because the South African Navy challenged the Russian and Chinese Navy to do soccer matches. And at the press briefing, the commander van der Bael said, we also challenged them to a rugby match and we got a firm niet. They were not interested in playing rugby, and everyone laughed on all sides because they knew who wants to play the South Africans in rugby. But the Chinese came marching, drilling in formation to the soccer field. The Russians arrived and left and moved around freely. But you could see the Chinese sailors, they were rigidly controlled. They didn't have the freedom to engage or to interact with the people as the Russians seemed to. So to me, it was very interesting and sad. Very sad on one side, the Chinese, but on the other side, the Chinese were behaving now like I saw the Russians behaving 30 years ago in Mozambique, whereas now you could see the Russians, the whole attitude was different and the spirit was different. And I felt like many of the Russians are Bible-believing Christians that we can relate to. There might have been secret Christians amongst the Chinese, and odds are there probably are, but they couldn't show it.
I mean, do you feel that we made any bit of a difference towards these sailors, Russian or Chinese, or even South African for that matter?
Well, we had some good conversations. We distributed literature. I certainly feel that we had good times with the Russians, and I feel that the gospelers on the Marshall Ustinov and the Russian sailors, there's an openness and there's a movement. And the South African Navy also wide open, no problem in openness to the gospel. The Chinese, I feel like maybe we made some impression from the outside, but they didn't show it one bit. So I have no confidence that we made an impression on the Chinese. I can only hope that they've been reached by gospel radio or some other means, but they probably even have the access to the internet controlled and access to radio. So how to reach the average Chinese? They need a secret Christian who's willing to take the risk to expose himself to witness to one atheist there, because that's a closed communist country. And you can see how the people in Hong Kong are campaigning and battling right now, vast amounts of Chinese people in Hong Kong, campaigning, even waving the old British colonial ensign flag, because to them, they don't want to be part of China. They want to be a free, independent Hong Kong. And I think for us, if we were to live in China, we would understand better. But as I haven't lived in China, I can only look at the people I've met, and I feel sorry for the people in the Chinese Navy.
And now, after having this experience, what have you learned that we can pray for about for these sailors and for all military services? And what do you think we have learned, or can we take from these examples?
Well, you know, the Bible says, Psalm 107, verse 23, those who go down to the sea in ships who do business on great waters. And of course, these oceans are great waters. We learned from the Chinese captain who was giving his report back that they had battled winds and waves for 3 months to get from China to South Africa. And they, I think, only made one port of call on the way. Now, the Russians, on the other hand, they took 5 months to get here, but they made many ports of call. They also called in Algeria and Egypt and Turkey and Greece, Cyprus, Cape Verde, Equatorial Guinea, and they took part in several other naval exercises before reaching South Africa, but that was 5 months' travel. And the distances has to impress us. We also told in the Bible, James 3 verse 4, look at the ships, although they are so large and driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. And so it's also to imagine this colossal ship, massive ship, tens of thousands of tons, and how it's moved by a small rudder, and how we are also turned by our decisions and our verbal understandings of things. So yes, what did I learn? I think it's impressive to see massive ships, which took a lot of building and a lot of construction and the manpower, the discipline, but to see these ships so clean, so well run, and the weaponry on it. Just for example, the Russian officers showing me around, they're explaining how they have got on there 64 surface-to-air missiles. 64 surface-to-air missiles. Now, these missiles have, they said, 100-kilometer range, which means they probably have more, if they're willing to admit to that. And those are in the ship, and they come out literally out of these tubes on the mid-deck. Then they've got their main weapon is 16 cruise missiles. Now, cruise missile can be nuclear. They've got a range of, they said, 500 kilometers, which means they probably have a longer range than that. Each cruise missile is a ton, and these can be launched, and they're precision-guided. GPSs were designed to guide cruise missiles to their exact address of where they wanted to go. So that's a phenomenal weapon. They have these Gatling guns. I even know the man who invented the Gatling gun and the cruise missile, General Ben Parton. And the Gatling guns can fire 6,000 rounds a minute. 6,000 rounds a minute. That's just phenomenal. And that each round is about 30 centimeters behind the other one. So they call it like a saw. And it's designed to take down aircraft that are coming for the ship. So you think of the old kamikaze pilots or the old dive bombers coming for a ship. This is designed to not just kill the plane, but to cut it in half so that the plane falls in the water, cannot reach them with whatever explosives it had. And so the anti-aircraft is phenomenal. Then they've got a whole lot of anti-submarine technology, which is absolutely staggering. You can see that they don't just launch one depth charge, but there's a whole multiplicity of depth charges that go at the same time that get it an entire grid that this ship, this submarine can't go any which way. It's going to go into one of those depth charges. So, and even the helicopter that they've got, it's an attack helicopter, but its primary goal is to identify submarines and to guide the weapon systems of the ship onto it. The amount of technology that's gone into these ships, so that's very fascinating and interesting. The discipline that keeps a ship going, and the fact that these are built for war, and to project power from a base that's so far away. I look at this and I'm thinking, this is really impressive. So yes, I can say I learned a lot, because first of all, I'm a infantryman. I'm not a naval person. Your granddad, my father-in-law, he was a naval man. He operates and destroys. So I know we've got some relatives who served in navies. But it was a look into another world.
So now we can see that they have a lot of military capabilities. But us as small South Africans, or even to the people listening, what resources are available to equip and empower us to be more effective witnesses for situations like these?
Well, it's so important to have the right literature because, okay, I don't speak Russian, I don't speak Chinese. But, praise God, there are ministries out there who've produced literature and videos and websites and audio resources for Russians, Chinese, or for that matter, Indonesians or Pakistanis and people from North Korea. So, World Missionary Press, Evangelical Mission Press, All Nations Gospel Publishers, these are some resources that provide the spiritual ammunition for evangelism. And there's power in the Word of God. And just take, for example, the reports I got from our Literature for Africa ministry just today. And Jonathan, who runs our Literature for Africa stores, he reports that from this mission base here, Livingston House in Cape Town, we have, in this last year, had 1,357 distributors come here to collect literature from us, and we have distributed, I mean, this is just staggering, 3,891,000 Bibles, gospel booklets, audiovisual materials, on, and he's got the breakdowns of an amount of languages, and it's just extraordinary. The breakdown of materials. Now, these materials have come from all over the world here, received by containers and other material, other ways. And when we go into the field, like on this occasion, Russian and Chinese naval vessels have arrived in the harbor today. What can I do tomorrow to take to them? Well, I go to the stores. What do you have in Russian and Chinese? And boxes come out and, you know, who would have even thought we've got Russian and Chinese here? How often do Russian and Chinese people come to Cape Town? But we had the supplies because that's what a good quartermaster does, having the literature. Now, you might be stuck in a place where you don't have a great literature resource nearby, but you can go onto the website. Now, if you go on the frontlinemissionsa.org website, you'll be interested to note that if you scroll down far enough, you'll see a whole lot of foreign flags, which includes the French flag and the German flag and the Russian flag. And we've got different materials, even from our mission, available in Russian, French, Chinese, and in Afrikaans and German and so on. So it's important to realize that online there are websites that have got vast amounts of gospel literature available that you can plug people into, including audio and including video, including the Jesus Form, for example, which is a great resource. Way of the Master has gotten quite a few different languages. And Evangelism Explosion has got resources in almost every key major language around. Now, if you divide up the world language-wise, it may surprise most people to know, do you know that there are over 14,000 languages and dialects in the world. It may also surprise people to know that there are 3,000 languages in Africa. What might also surprise people to know is that in Africa, although we've got 3,000 languages, most people in Africa know, the vast majority know, at least one of five languages. So there are five trade languages. English is the official language of 24 countries. French is the official language of 21 countries in Africa. And so French and English can get you quite far. Arabic is the official language of the seven northernmost countries in Africa. Okay, so they've got already three languages. Now you add Portuguese, that's a language of five countries in Africa. And then you can add Swahili, which is a trade language of a lot of East Africa, meaning Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania. And if you go to West Africa, Hausa, there's a lot of people who speak Hausa. That's a northern Nigerian language, but it's a huge group of people. So there's six languages, of which four are foreign languages, English, French, Portuguese, and Arabic. And two are indigenous, Swahili and Hausa. So you can reach everyone in Africa, almost, with just six languages, even though there are 3,000 dialects of languages here. And Gospel Recordings has got materials, audio resources, in over 4,800 languages, including just about every language in Africa. So there's great amounts of materials. Do you know that the Jesus Film is available in something like 2,000 languages already? The Jesus Film alone, that two-hour film all based on the Gospel of Luke. So there are some great resources available. And like any army needs weapons, you know, I've mentioned the Marshal Ustinov's got these cruise missiles and these surface-to-air missiles and these Gatling guns. Well, from a Christian point of view, what do we have? We've got prayer. We have the Bible. We have gospel literature. We have videos, DVDs. Yes, we've got the power of the printed page and the pen. We've got even those people who've got smartphones. The amount of material you can access from this and send to people. There are whole Bible study correspondence courses and resources available online, like a William Carey Bible Institute program, williamcareybi.com, where you can access treasure troves of books and videos and audio lectures. So there's some great, great materials out there. And for example, these audio Bibles, just think, one of the ways that we smuggle, and I'm sorry that we failed to even get this to the Chinese, but we manage in the Muslim world better. We put on SD card. We've got SD cards. That's a little 4G, 4 gigabyte SD card like you would fit in a smartphone. And on one 4 gigabyte SD card, what can you fit? Let's assume you're going to a Muslim country like Saudi Arabia. You can put the Jesus Film in Arabic, the Bible in Arabic, the Bible audio in Arabic, a whole host of Bible studies in Arabic, and a whole lot of other materials too, books and so on, in one 4G SD card. And it can slip, I mean, you can smuggle that how easy and get that into their hands. Then you've got these flash drives. We've got flash drives at 64 gigabytes. I've got SD cards that of 164 gigabytes, which we have put vast amounts of libraries of materials. You get that in the hands of persecuted church people that dissipates throughout. Then there's other resources. A person may be surprised to know that amongst the technology that is used by missionaries to the persecuted church, take if you're going into a Muslim country and you're in, say, a really, really closed country like Saudi Arabia. How can you reach people when it's dangerous to even approach them? Well, take the Raspberry Pi. Apparently, that's the actual name of this technology. It's like a little hotspot so that you can be in a marketplace, airport terminal, bus station, and so on, and it's got a few hundred meters range. And a person is looking for a free Wi-Fi kind of thing to latch onto to interact with. And next thing it comes up and says, would you like, in this language, of course, message of Nabi Isa, Nabi, Prophet, Isa, Jesus. So would you like the Gospel of Jesus in audio, in literature form, or in film version? And they can tap and they can download. Now, you can't see who's got it, and it's a small and inexpensive little broadcast station, so to speak. And if, say, some sensors, because it's not an internet, it's just in that little bubble. Now, if the government is monitoring that area and they see somebody is offering the gospel in this area and they start to search, you could ditch this equipment even. I mean, it's a small little thing. It's the size of a little packet. It's not big at all. You could ditch it. It's not that expensive. And keep going and avoid, even if they start searching one. But it's easy to smuggle and easy to broadcast, easy for people to reach. These are just some of the technologies available. We're broadcasting through William Carey Bible Institute, williamcareybi.com, a vast amount of Bibles, books, audios in different languages too, on many subjects that provide huge amounts of education and discipleship and evangelistic material to people of many different countries and areas, and they can download if they've access to the internet. And those who don't have access to the internet, like in China, well, you've got to be able to smuggle to them some little SD card or flash drive, or put something in a bubble where they can download in that marketplace area and so on. So there are resources available even to reach the unreached.
Well, we can praise God for this big opportunity to reach out to these sailors, and to all of you listening, I hope that you took notes of the various websites, Dr. Haben. Could you just mention those websites one more time for all of us?
Yes, indeed. In fact, it also reminds me of one other thing, that 5 years ago we had a wonderful military outreach opportunity where the Association of Christian Military Fellowships, ACMF, gathered together in Cape Town Observatory, not even 3-4 kilometres away from here, shortest distance we've ever had travel for a convention. 600 military Christians from 100 different countries gathered together, and we were able to be there and part of it, and that was great. And so the website's frontlinemissionsa.org, frontlinemissionsa.org. That's our main one, and you'll find on there the flags of different foreign countries where you will get resources in French, German, Russian, and so on. And the williamcareybi.com, BI for Bible Institute, williamcareybi.com. Those would be two great resources. And by the way, if you go onto the livingstonfellowship.co.za website, we've got over 70 gospel tracts, evangelistic leaflets that you can download, some in different languages as well. And they're in the format that you can read, or you can download in a printable format, color or black and white, as you choose. And so those are all available. livingstonfellowship.co.za or williamcareybi.com. And frontlinemissionsa.org has got the most. And one of the things that I think people should really be encouraged to look at to inspire them is the new video which has been uploaded, which has been edited by Christopher and Hunt and Razan, Missions to the Nubian Mountains of Sudan. And that's one of the videos available up front on our website. And that gives you a short 13-minute insight into the biggest Bible smuggling operations ever into a Muslim country, where they delivered 125,000 Bibles and books this year into an officially Islamic country, one of the most remote, dangerous areas imaginable, the Nubian Mountains of Sudan. And that video is available online now. So frontlinemissionsa.org.
We could almost find it laughable if we compare how easy it is for us to get these resources with just the click of a few links, compared to how difficult it was for Dr. David Livingstone, Mary Slessor, etc. I hope everyone listening took note of those websites. Please feel free to use them and to be ready for the opportunities that come our way. Thank you so much for tuning in. God bless.